Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be the podcast for you. And with a tip of the hat and a merry jig, we join you again. I have no idea where this crap comes from.
Yeah, I don't know either, because you don't wear hats. Except as Bernie.
And I don't jig either, so... Except as Bernie.
Both of those can be true for Bernie.
Maybe I should just do a Bernie. Maybe when you're on Halloween, we'll do a Bernie podcast.
All right.
But anyways, yes, indeed, we are back. It is Monday again, so we are pleased to join you for another episode of Haunt Weekly. As again, I am Jonathan. This is Crystal sitting opposite of me in the, this is not the Lair of Despair. We decided that was Kyle's house. We need a new name for our, we wanted to help him get the ladies and really punch up the name of his home.
Yeah, I don't think he has problems.
I don't think he has problems either, honestly. But anyways, yes, we're happy to be back this week. We have a great topic this week, a very core one to the industry, if you will. Indoor v. outdoor haunts. Yep. The advantages, disadvantages, what's right for you. And I find this topic interesting because most haunts, this is like so fundamental.
Yeah.
Most haunts don't even think about it.
Right. It's like, we've got land. We're going to be an outdoor haunt.
I got a building. We're doing an indoor haunt.
Yes. I'm in a city.
I want to make an indoor. People don't even think about this. Yeah. It's like, if you've ever thought about opening a haunted attraction, you've already decided the indoor v. outdoor thing.
Yeah.
But maybe you shouldn't have. Maybe you should look deeper.
Yeah.
Rabble, rabble, rabble.
Rar?
I don't know. But anyways, first thing is first, we do have to do our conference reminders.
Yay.
We have a lot to go through this week, so we're going to tear through them. Who wants to start off? You want me to do it or you want to?
I can.
All right, go for it, Crystal.
Virginia Haunt Fest, June 3rd and 4th.
Coming up soon, guys.
Yeah, very soon. Misty Mount Camp Resort, Greenwood, Virginia, aimed at Virginia Haunters, virginiahauntfest.com.
Go camping. Go into... It's an outdoor, not just an outdoor haunt, it's an outdoor haunted convention.
Yay!
You should go. The next one is the Midwest Haunters Convention and the Greater Columbus Convention Center. A tour of the Scaratorium is part of it, and you can learn more at Midwest Haunters, with an S there, convention.com.
Then it's Midsummer Scream Halloween Festival, midsummerscream.org.
You did that just to mess with my compression algorithm, didn't you?
I did. July 3rd. 30th and 31st, Long Beach Convention Center, from Creepy LA and Theme Park Adventure, Universal Disney, Six Flags, and Not Scary Farm in attendance and sponsoring. This is their first year, and a big thanks again to Greg Packard for the suggestion.
Yes, we did not know about that one. We appreciate the heads up, Greg. Chicago Frights is coming up 29 through 31st at Orland Park, Illinois. That's near Chicago. It's at the Giorgio, I still want to say Cheerios.
Yeah.
Giorgio's Quality Inn and Suites. ChicagoFrights.com. This is kind of the sister, the sister convention to HauntCon. So check it out.
Right. And then we have Scare LA, August 6th and 7th.
You nearly said October.
August 6th and 7th. No, I was still in the Scare LA. But Pasadena Convention Center, ScareLA.com. Elvira's hosting. There's other cool people there,
other
too.
Other cool people there, too. Then you have Mask Fest, September 9th through 11th at the Marriott Indianapolis East. Find out more at MaskFest.com. Finally, a domain. Then make these last two domains are good domains.
Yes. Then Motor City Nightmares, September 16th through 18th. I believe this is a new one to our list.
Yes, it is. I added it, and we have someone to thank for this, but we are thanking him already below in the notes.
Oh, okay. And this is for a horror expo and film festival.
It's at the Novi Sheraton in Novi, Michigan.
And PJ Souls will be there, so any local H fans.
There's like a huge list of people in attendance, but PJ Souls was the one I cared about the most. So yes. I put PJ Souls on the damn list.
Yes.
That's how this show rolls. Elvira and PJ Souls.
Nope.
Done. All right, then we have the Legendary Haunt Tour in Pittsburgh. It is Hotel TBA. It's November 11th through 12th, and it's hosted by the people behind Transworld and also... You know, all those wonderful St. Louis area haunts. They'll be visiting the Scare House and the 100 Acre Manor. I will not make my Winnie the Pooh joke this time. Ha! And you can learn more at LegendaryHauntTour. There's two T's there. .com.
Yep.
So yes, a lot to check out. A lot of great events to go. We're down to 8. Just like hurricanes here. We're just getting longer in the show. The show notes are done like in a bullet point thing, and like these are like A through whatever. So it's
should post them sometime on Facebook.
Yes, we should.
Let you guys have fun looking at them.
When we actually do have a proper site, we will actually make a convention section of the site.
Yes.
And maintain it, upkeep that, I promise.
Right.
All
right,
now, first things first, before we dive into our main topic, we have not necessarily a correction, but a clarification.
Yes, a clarification on our maze topic.
Yeah, episode 23, we discussed mazes and said some not so kind things about haunts that have mazes at the end instead of maze versus maze attractions. But we also said we were unclear on the difference between the mazes and labyrinths.
Right. And Benjamin Rodriguez stepped out to us on Facebook.
Yes.
Thank you, Benjamin.
And by the way, he was also the one who notified me about Motor City Nightmares, worth noting. I don't know if he intended to, but when I saw that he was like was from there and his profile pic was from there, I checked it out, and it turns out they're having a convention, so I added it to the list. So cool. Thank you for that accidental heads up on a convention, too. This is how we grow people.
Yes, yes.
Creepy stalking.
We're good at that. So yeah, basically, Labyrinth has just one path.
But it can be winding and...
Yeah, so this is the layout for most haunts.
Yes.
And a maze has dead ends and you can get lost.
And yeah, basically a haunted attraction is a labyrinth.
Yep.
That, well, if it's not a maze, you know what I mean?
Yes,
like, every haunted attraction is a labyrinth. But still, I would not go telling your local fire marshal that. Because the other thing is the modern colloquial of the two is they are almost identical.
Right.
But still, on this podcast, we strive to be technically correct. Because as we all know, technically correct is the best type of correct. So thank you, Benjamin Rodriguez, for that help. Helping us be technically correct.
Yes.
Seriously, actually, it was a cool thing to learn.
Yeah, I liked the little link that he provided and the map.
I'll have to drop that into the show notes. That's really cool. Okay, but indoor versus outdoor.
Well, and if you don't know what we're talking about and you're not following us on Facebook,
yes.
Why not?
Yes.
You would have seen this already.
Yes, we are on Facebook at Haunt Weekly. We are on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. Hit us up at either of those places. We, like I said, we're working on upgrading the web situation some now that we're gaining a little more traction, getting some more peoples in. So we're going to have full email all that stuff soon.
And we have, a hired hand. Well, okay, so it's a stepson in the house for a few weeks that he needs a project.
Yeah, and
he needs a summer project.
I just fixed his flipping computer. He'd better be grateful.
I'm sure he is.
All right, but yeah, so let's move on to the topic du jour of the week. It's indoor versus outdoor haunting. And it's like I said, I find this interesting because most people, when they start thinking about becoming haunters,
right,
they've already made the decision.
Yeah.
They don't even think about this. This is never even considered.
Right.
I mean, basically, it's like you said, if you're thinking about haunting and you're in the wilderness somewhere, you're probably going to be building a outdoor haunt.
Right.
If you're in a city somewhere, you're probably going to be building an indoor haunt. But that isn't universally true either.
No.
That's how it works out. Real quick, I wanted to... I think the definitions are fairly obvious, but it still is worthwhile to take a moment to actually discuss this. Indoor attractions are obviously ones that take place mostly inside a building.
Yes.
We like to refer back to our local area and the haunts we know and have in our immediate area. The one that makes me think of them first is mortuary.
Yeah.
That takes place pretty much entirely within a mortuary.
Yeah, that's completely indoors.
I don't think there... Other than the line, and we're not counting lines, people.
No, we're not talking about the line queue and the line actors or if there's anything outside in the line. If you can see it from the street, which I guess technically mortuary crosses that line, but yeah, if you don't have to actually get into the house.
Yeah. Once the haunt starts, it's indoors exclusively.
Right.
Outdoor ones are almost completely outside, and the one we actually reference there a lot is Waterloo.
Yeah.
Because that's our favorite outdoor haunt that we were at last season. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and that's near St. Louis area.
Right.
Illinois, I believe, right?
Yeah.
It was southwest Illinois.
Yeah. Waterloo Sportsman something or other.
Sportsman Club.
Sportsman's Club.
Yeah, seriously, checking them out. They have a Facebook.
Yes.
And then there are hybrid attractions that use significant indoor and outdoor components, either in the same haunt or as separate attractions. Right. And the House of Shock meets that qualification here.
Yes.
And the reason I say that is, A, the haunt itself does have outdoor portions, mm-hmm. but I think more importantly, the line and the stage show is an outside thing.
Right.
And that is, in my opinion, a part of the haunt.
Right.
Because it's a selling point. It's something they, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree. Also, 13th Gate would fall into that category.
Yes, because
not only does the 13th Gate itself have indoor and outdoor portions, mm-hmm. but they also have Necropolis, which is an outdoor thing.
Entirely, almost.
Across from their indoor thing.
Yeah. And Necropolis, by the way, I think we were talking about how most rural people build outdoor haunts.
Right.
And most urban people build indoor haunts. Necropolis 13 is an example of an outdoor haunt built way deep into the city.
Right.
You can't get much more downtown Baton Rouge
than right outside of LSU Stadium, though.
It's pretty goddamn downtown.
Yeah.
And the result of it is they managed to basically, within a block or so, like a square block of space, build an outdoor haunt. They did so, and it lasts a good 20-odd minutes or so. It's a good block of time. They did it through snaking and very, very tight use of the space they had.
Right.
So it's actually a really good case study in haunt design.
Now, I do want to give one quick shout-out, because this doesn't just apply to the big people.
No.
This could apply to home haunters, whether you want to build a front yard walkthrough, or you want to build something in your garage if you have a garage.
Yeah.
You know, this applies to both of those situations, too.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and it's also not just, you know, and thinking about, like, the terror test, for example. I know, we don't want to think about them too hard.
Yeah.
But remember, that is a very, very rural haunt.
Yes.
That's almost entirely indoors.
Yeah.
It's about at least 2/3 indoors.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it's more indoors than out. It's just the outdoors scarier because of the safety.
That's a separate podcast.
Yes.
But, yeah, so basically that's not a hard and fast rule.
Right.
This is a decision you do want to make. And I would encourage more haunters to make this one consciously.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons for that is because I've seen people open haunts that are just wrong for the area and wrong for what they're trying to do.
Right.
And it's really sad. And we actually met some people at HauntCon that were really struggling with this. They did an outdoor haunt in an area where it pretty much rains constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're struggling. I'm not going to lie. And we've met people that have tried to, you know, to go through all the expense and all the headaches. And we met these people at the House of Shock.
Right.
They were in a rural area. They went through all the effort, all the expense, all the trouble to build this giant flipping warehouse haunt in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a big, huge haunt, but they had fire marshal disasters one after another. They spent a ton of money. So,
yeah, they actually had to build a fire suppression system and bring in extra, like a water tower, basically,
Their
property.
The way they described it, and this is, admittedly, this is, like, officially third hand here.
Yeah.
They basically built, like, a water tower on top of the haunt that gravity fed into the sprinkler system, and they said it was built to the standards of a nuclear power plant.
Yeah, because they had so much trouble. I mean, they had cleared it, or they thought they'd cleared it, but it wasn't in writing. So then whenever it was built, the fire marshal's like,
nope,
actually that won't work. You got to do more.
Yeah.
And so they lost. They were starting out behind budget.
They were already.
Already over budget, rather.
Yeah. They were deep in a hole by the time they opened.
Yeah.
And the long and short of it is, I think they found success,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, maybe an outdoor haunt might have been slightly smarter. They were in an area that didn't have so much rain. Actually, a pretty good climate.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, well, and you don't even have to worry about just rain, but in the north, you've got to worry about snow and cold.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about all that and a lot more. So
let's
start with our look at indoor attractions, because that's what most people seem to think of and where we kind of begin our conversation usually.
Right.
The advantages thereof.
Okay.
First, complete control.
Yes, over the environment.
You have complete control over everything. You want a wall, you build a wall.
Yeah.
You want a light there, you put a light there.
Yeah.
You want this room to be colder than that room, you make that room colder.
Mm-hmm.
You can adjust every variable. You want to put fog? You can put fog. You want to put smells? You can put smells. And not to worry about them being blown out by every gust of wind.
Right.
You have total 110% control over your environment. That is a very, very powerful thing for a haunter.
It is. Because, as you know, I'm big on lighting scenes and decorating. And if the lighting isn't exact, if I can't control that, granted, I like to control things anyway, mm-hmm. then I might have issues. You know? Well, there are ways to light outdoor scenes properly.
Oh, yes,
don't get
absolutely.
Me wrong.
But
it's just more difficult.
It's much, much more difficult because not only are you having to work more with what nature gave you.
Right.
But you're going to have to be dealing with varying conditions.
Right.
What if it's overcast?
What if it's
bright,
really
big,
bright
beautiful moon?
Yeah.
What if it's super starry? What if it's kind of hazy?
Yeah.
You know, these aren't necessarily things that would shutter the haunt.
No.
But could easily throw off a precision lighting job. For example, if you wanted to spotlight something for a distract and startle, you have to do much more with it.
Right.
With an indoor haunt, you have that control. You can black out things and you put a bright damn light on whatever you want. And
yeah.
you can trust it's going to be that way night after night after night. No problems.
Right.
That's huge. You can build much more complex scares and aggressive scares, and I find an indoor haunt. And that by that I mean, with an indoor haunt, you can do tons of drop panels. You can build actor reaches and lofts, and you could build these things in outdoor haunts, but it's much more difficult to construct them and to, you know, make them so that they're not so obvious coming.
Right, because, I mean, one of the things is, like, even at Waterloo.
Yes.
When we were walking, most of it's trail and scenes on the trail. But they do have several buildings set up.
Yes, that they construct on site.
Yes. So, you know, when you go into one of those buildings, there's going to be a scare.
Yeah.
There's no question.
No.
You're prepared. Something's going to happen.
And I'm going to say this about Waterloo while we're talking about that. Mm-hmm. I think all of the best scares, granted, Ellie loved that one guy that got her three times. That was hilarious.
Yes.
But I think all of the greatest scares, for me at least, were in the outdoor parts.
Me too.
That one guy was king, man. He was on point. I'm not knocking his work.
Oh, no.
But the stuff they pulled out of doors because they were really forced to use their imagination.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can tell these are some sick bastards who spend all year coming up with this stuff. I love you guys.
Yes. Okay, so back on topic.
But yes, it's much easier to build and hide these scares
right.
in indoor haunt. When you have that structure, when you have that degree of control, you can do that.
Right.
Also, and this is a huge one, you don't have to close on rainy days.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so huge. Now, yes, rain will keep people away.
Yes.
But you don't have to close. Go ahead. What were you about to say?
No, you don't have to close, and you don't have to worry about the next day. What if your haunted trail
is a haunted swamp?
Exactly. It's a mud bath, you know? It's puddle city. Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing I didn't put on this list that's somewhat related to that is you don't have to worry about getting power to things.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I heard over and over and over again at like HauntCon. I've never actually run a haunted trail, so I'm kind of firing blind on that side of it.
Yeah.
But
well, we do a pretty big yard display.
Yeah.
And I know it doesn't compare to a full trail.
No.
But there are power issues there too.
Yeah. Even in our, but that's what I was about to say, is even in our yard display, which is nowhere near what we're describing with the trail
no.
mode, I know just having to deal with, you know, like 50, it's like a 50 by 50 thing here,
mm-hmm.
just how messed up power can be in that span.
Right.
It's tough to get power to everything. And then when you have a yard display, you're probably dealing with a big trail, you're probably dealing with lots of generators, which make a lot of noise.
Right.
You're probably dealing with tons of extension cords that you have to find some way to make them not trip hazards.
Right.
Good
not
luck.
Trip hazards, and you have to buy the higher quality ones for outdoor use.
Yes, it's there's some effort there. But also, it's worth noting that actor and customer comfort is just better in general with a indoor haunt.
Right.
I mean, they're not getting rained on. They're not exposed to the elements.
Yeah.
It's generally much, much more comfortable. Now, that being said, if you put actors in uncomfortable or difficult places, it doesn't matter if it's indoor or outdoor.
Yeah.
But, you know, it, on the whole.
Safety first, actor comfort second.
Yes, indeed, indeed. And basically, though, what it comes down to, an indoor haunt is just a lot more stable and a lot more consistent in terms of both the quality of the attraction and the foot traffic.
Right.
Now, a lot of outdoor haunts work very, very hard to provide that consistent quality night after night after night.
Right.
But they have to overcome obstacles that indoor haunts don't in order to make that happen, like Knott's Scary Farm and so forth. They have a lot of extra work ahead of them to maintain that consistency.
Right.
They do it, but it's a lot more work than if they just had put a big old building somewhere and worked from it.
Right.
So, keeping with the theme of indoor haunts, disadvantages.
Disadvantages of indoor haunts.
Yes. The big one for me is higher startup and maintenance costs in general.
Yeah, because you got to either get a building or build a building, and you can buy the metal ones, but then you've got to make it... Unless you're doing industrial, you don't want it to look like a metal building.
You
got to
do a facade. You got to find. You know what I mean. You got to do work. To make this...
match 13th gate. As soon as you walk in to the house, you can't tell that you're in a metal building anymore. It's completely immersive.
Yeah, that's one.
Unless
of
you look up. Well, like, you know, I look for holes in the ceiling.
Yeah, you
so
and
I
well, we're haunters, and we do this game where we will. You know, we like studying how haunts are built.
Right.
That's part of the fun of us going to haunts. It's not us just being dicks.
Yeah.
I mean, we are being dicks in a way, but it's not just that. We like seeing how haunts are built because we like admiring that craftsmanship and seeing all that effort. And so when we go through haunts, one of the things we do is we look for places where we can see behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, 13th Gate is one of the best at masking those gaps.
You're
going to be very hard-pressed to find places where you can see the metal building. And in fact, like I remember in the Jack the Ripper sequence there, they did that whole starry sky.
Yeah.
Which admittedly was probably not terribly difficult other than the sheer size of it.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's huge. It's not too difficult in terms of what they did. It's mostly, you know, it looks like it's mostly a fabric with some twinkle lights and things protruding. It's not difficult.
At least it looks big. Come and think of it,
though. Yeah, maybe it's not.
Maybe it could be an infinity mirror thing.
Ooh! Yeah. Maybe we're getting double wide, too.
Yeah.
But yes, but we do that. And I'm sure others do as well. But the point of the matter is, there's a lot of work that has to be done in it. If you were opening an indoor haunt, your biggest upfront expense is going to be that building.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. Whether, it doesn't matter. Rent, lease,
permits,
buy it. Yeah. It's going to be your number one expense.
Yeah.
Everything else is second to that.
Yeah.
And in a way, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because as we know from here in our city, sometimes if your haunt doesn't do so good, that building becomes your equity that you use to build another haunt.
Right.
So you can use that. It's still property, you know, you own it, as long as, like I said, you own it. But the point of the matter is that is expensive.
Yes, it is.
And the next issue is fire code compliance. I mean, this is tough because now you have an indoor building. You have to think about things like fire exits, sprinkler systems, and all that jazz that you don't necessarily have to think about with an outdoor haunt. So this takes a lot to overcome here.
Right.
You have to be really, really thinking about these issues from literally day one. And, yeah, I mean, there's every once in a while you hear horror stories of some outdoor haunt that's being told they have to spray their corn with flame retardant, which is just dumb.
Yes, actual story.
That's an actual story. We didn't make that
from
one
the
up.
From a conference. But.
Yeah, he wanted us to, basically, the fire marshal, one of these guys that had like a corn maze type thing.
Right.
To spray every stalk of corn flipping flame retardant.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was like.
Dead corn or live corn?
Exactly. I don't know if they own the corn field and it was live corn that was healthy, or if it was, you know, they brought in a bunch of dead corn. So,
I'm just saying, I know like flash fires and so forth can move very fast.
Yeah.
But I get that. But at the same time, when you don't have to worry about fire exits, you can usually move away from the fire.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, with the indoor haunt, you have... to have that corridor, that egress corridor, that takes up a lot of room of your haunt, especially if you have a small building. But outdoors, if you see a fire, you're always 4 feet from an exit. You just run the other way.
Yeah, just, fire, I'm going that way.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay, but yes, And finally, when you have an indoor haunt, unless you happen to be the mortuary, you have a lot of work ahead of you for building ambiance.
Yeah.
Because it's like you said, I mean, if you start out with just a metal building, which is how a lot of haunts do start.
Right.
Now you've got to build a facade. Yeah. Now you've got to build the structure within the structure. Now you've got to find a way to light it so the structure isn't painfully obvious.
Right.
Then you've got to find a way, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you've got to have a whole crew of construction people in addition to your construction materials.
A facade, basically, you have to take a building that was probably designed, whether it's a warehouse, just one of those plain metal buildings, or whatever, or even an old storefront like we're seeing more and more of.
Right.
You have to take this building that was designed for a very, very different use and make it scary.
Yes.
That's tough.
It is.
That to me is probably one of the more difficult elements of haunt design, is this idea of taking something that was designed to house lumber or, you know, be a store that people shopped at.
Right, or just a warehouse.
Or just a good old-fashioned warehouse or whatever,
yeah.
And make it something that scares people intrinsically.
Yeah.
That's, even I wrestle with how to do that one sometimes, you know what I mean? That's difficult.
That's okay. That's not your main job.
No, it's not. Thank God, right? Thank God I'm a character actor. Now, that being said, we'll take a look at outdoor haunts, because, I mean, starting off with the advantages there, the obvious first advantage is construction costs drop.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have, now, one of the things that a lot of people seem to think, and I've seen this at some of the trail haunts we've been to, is some people think that means no construction costs.
Wrong. Yeah.
You still got to build some crap. You still got to have some lighting out there. You still got to have...
Well, not only that, but you've got to clear cut your path.
Oh, God.
You want to make sure that you have a path that is that's as level as possible.
Yes.
You know, no roots and things for people to trip over.
Yeah.
Nothing in the way that's dangerous or harmful.
Yeah.
Can be harmful.
Yeah, there are construction costs.
Yeah.
But they are not the same as buying a building and then making it spooky.
Right.
You know, it doesn't compare to that.
Right.
But, yeah, you still are going to pay construction. I think construction costs may still be the most expensive part of your startup.
Yeah, it probably will be. But also, you know, land out in the country is typically cheaper than land inside of a city.
Yes.
So that's something else to think about.
Yeah. Usually, with an outdoor attraction, you will have fewer fire code issues.
Right.
And that's because you're not going to have many structures that really... Because, for fire code purposes, usually a building has to be of a certain size.
Right.
Before a fire code even becomes an issue.
Yeah.
You might build like shacks and structures, but you're probably not going to have anything that has to meet those full-fledged fire code issues.
Right.
And even if you do, you're probably in a rural location with fire departments, as we've learned over the years, that don't care as much.
Well, yeah, and it's not only walking trails, but also with the haunted hayrides, which are outdoor haunted attractions.
Yes, they are.
They come into this too. So you have to buy the vehicle. You have to make sure that it can get down there. But that, I think that would probably save you a lot on the fire code too, because you're in a vehicle that's moving and can get away faster.
You know. It's always interesting because that's, you do run into other safety and also other licensing issues when you bring vehicles into it, depending upon where you are. And this is something I know absolutely nothing about. You may need special permits on those vehicles for carrying people.
Right.
Similar to like taxis and so forth.
Right.
But you might need that.
Exactly.
I don't know if that's the case or not. I've not actually looked that one up. That's why I'm sitting here stammering, because I did not actually think of that angle.
Yes. So if you have one of those,
tell me.
Let us know.
Like I said, I have never really and truly worked an outdoor haunt before, so I am doing the best I can with some of this.
Yeah.
But yeah. Now, the main advantage though is that they are typically easier to start up.
Yes.
It's typically easier to get a outdoor haunt going. Because if you've got the land already,
right,
you don't have to do as much. Yes, you have to trim the bushes back, tamp out, dig up the roots, do all that stuff, clear the trail, pat it down. But as far as, you know, compared to, you know, building an entire facade, building a structure within a structure,
right,
all that stuff, it's much, much easier to open a trail haunt most of the time.
Yeah.
Not all the time.
Right.
But much of the time, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this amazing ambiance just all around you. Because, I mean, I'll say this. I love the wilderness, man. I love camping. Yeah. I love the woods.
Right.
There is still not that much scarier than the woods alone at night.
No.
Maybe that's one of the reasons I love camping, but...
Yeah.
Maybe this is saying something about me, but that's like ambience 101.
Yeah, I remember in college, my friend's daughter had a sleepover. And so we told ghost stories, and then we had the girls walk out into the woods down the trail,
mm-hmm.
and then we went and hid behind trees. You know,
yeah.
rustle leaves and stuff, and just heard them scream. It was fun.
Yeah, ambiance it's like a done thing, though, man. It's,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. You've got that from day one.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to build a giant facade. You don't have to worry about lighting every single thing or detailing every scene. You've right. got the ambiance, you know.
Yeah, the main thing to light is the trail to make sure that people
don't trip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lighting now goes from being, you know, something that you have to do very carefully for the purpose of ambiance,
right.
something you have to do very carefully for the purpose of safety.
Right.
Instead of ambiance and safety, like in a major, main, like an indoor haunt.
Right.
Now, that being said, the disadvantages are pretty legion here.
Weather.
Rain in general kills. Rain especially, rain, snow, weather kills the haunt. Here's the thing. If you are opening an outdoor haunt, look into and acquire rain insurance. It is a thing.
Yes.
If you did not know that was a thing, it is a thing.
Yes.
I looked up. There are several places online that will sell it to you. This is invaluable.
Right.
Because here's the thing, guys. Your haunt, most likely, is only going to be open 12 to 15 nights out of the year.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You lose 4 of those nights to rain, that's a quarter of your income.
Yeah.
A third to a quarter of your income, man.
Yep.
You can't afford to lose that.
Yeah.
And especially if it rains on flipping Halloween.
Right.
I mean, dude, that's what nearly killed the House of Shock.
Yeah, it helped.
it was certainly a contributing factor.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Because they had that year they closed for Halloween.
Yes.
We couldn't even fathom that.
No. We were number 2 that year.
Woohoo! Go our tiny little home on.
But yeah,
I mean, it's crazy, but I mean, it's like, wow, the House of Shock closed. And yes, it's because they have significant outdoor portions.
Right.
Their stage show area turns into a swamp.
Yeah.
And their outdoor portions become impassable. They have to, and that and the pyrotechnics probably don't work. I'm only guessing that one. I don't know much about pyrotechnics. But
yeah.
I suspect their pyrotechnics would not work properly in rain.
They probably have some issues, yeah.
Yeah. So yes, rain kills the haunt. Weather in general does.
Right.
But rain especially kills it. As such, it is not appropriate at all in some climates.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing. We have been to outdoor haunts in Louisiana, mm-hmm. Mississippi, South Carolina, and Illinois.
Yes.
And all of those were fine. The Illinois one was Waterloo. It was chilly, but it was southern Illinois, so it was not,
hopelessly cold. Fine.
I could not imagine. I mean, I'm sure they exist. But imagine, like, an outdoor haunt in Maine.
Yeah. Actually, the Headless Horseman right outside of New York is an outdoor haunted attraction that's featured on TV pretty much every year.
Yeah.
And from reading the reviews and looking at the pictures, it does have some large structures, but from the reviews, you're on a truck bed, so it's a hayride without the hay.
Yeah.
Is what it was described as.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, that's going to be cold.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I suspect they do the hayride approach. So that way you can sit there, you're huddled around other people for warmth.
Right.
You're not just walking alone and through the woods and,
yeah,
you know, being cold.
Right.
So that's one of the things you have to think about, is if you're in a cold climate,
yeah,
you've got to think about how are you going to keep your customers comfortable over the course of that trip. You can encourage them to bring a jacket all you want.
Right. And also, if you are doing the hayride thing, make sure that the people that are sitting in the middle have some way to see what's going on.
Yeah, if you have a middle.
Yeah, because the review that I read from them, actually the person was unlucky enough to get set in the middle, could not see anything, did not enjoy it.
Yeah.
The other reviews, though, really loved it because they were sitting on the outside of the truck bed. And
that's a good point. Be thinking about that, too. But yeah, be thinking about your customer comfort in that environment. But it's especially rough in rainy climates.
Yes.
I mean, okay, we're kind of lucky where we're at, because yes, we are in one of the rainiest places in the country, but fall and winter are not our rainy seasons.
Yeah, we have definite rain seasons starting in about April.
Now.
Yeah.
a little bit earlier than now, but now-ish.
April to May, and it lasts until about September.
Yeah. And right before haunts open, it dies out.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think last year, and that the year the not last year, it was the year the House of Shock closed on Halloween. I think that was the first year there'd even been a whiff of rain on Halloween.
Yeah.
Was last year there was threats of rain on Halloween.
Right. There were enough threats that they moved trick-or-treating to Friday from Saturday.
Which is bullshit!
Yes,
that just means
that I have to give out candy twice.
Bullshit.
That we do.
Oh my god.
Well, that are, and it means that we have to arrange for somebody to hand out the candy because we're both in the haunt.
Yeah, I mean, it is bullshit.
Yeah.
You can't do that, man.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
We had more trick-or-treaters on Halloween anyway.
Yeah, and it was just a sprinkle, you know.
One that died down before it was night.
Yeah.
We had a bone-dry Halloween night.
Yeah.
I mean, anyways, that's a separate piss off, right? I'm not even going too deep into that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so not right in all climates. Safety issues do get really important. We talked about Waterloo a lot. I love what they did with the trail.
Yes.
Where it is covered with like mulch of some sort.
Yeah.
And packed down and then lit on both sides with orange rope lights.
Right.
It's beautiful. It's easy to see. It looks good, and I think it makes it easier for the actors to hide, because you've got this wall of light.
Right.
That you really can't see very far past.
Well, no, because it's also the woods, and it's dark.
Yeah, so you have, like, a wall here that you can't see much past. It's really cool. Versus, like, you know, I think The Psychopath, for example.
Right.
Which had issues with roots and stumps all along the trail.
Oh, my gosh.
And unmarked trails.
Yes. Unmarked, so roots and stumps, holes... And this is the perfect place to put strobe lights. No, no, it isn't. Okay? It isn't.
No. People, yeah, you've got to think about these safety issues. And also, you've got to think about this. You've got people roaming around in the dark on a huge piece of property, but it's most likely a big piece of property.
Right.
What happens if someone gets lost?
Yeah.
Wanders off the trail in an accident. I mean, even on like Waterloo, where they do such a meticulous job lighting the trail, it could happen.
It could. You know, some kid or something goes, hey, I'm going to go that way.
Yeah, just, you know, kids, they're stupid sometimes. I'm going that way. I'm going to go this way now. I'm tired of following the lights. I'm going that way.
Yeah.
Kids do that stuff.
Billy, get back here.
Oh, crap. Yeah. The monsters got him.
Yeah.
No, that stuff happens. You got to think about these issues. Also, they have to be located almost always in rural areas. Like I said, Necropolis 13. Is the exception that proves the rule.
Right.
But generally, you need a lot of land for these.
Right.
And generally, the place you're going to get a lot of land at a price that you can afford to put a haunt on it is in rural areas.
Yes.
And so, automatically, this is going to make your marketing cheaper, more difficult, rather. You're going to be away from population centers. You're going to have to either convince the people in the population center to come to the country.
Right.
Or you're going to have to, you know, try to pull from the people near you in your area and just have a smaller pool to draw from.
Right.
And my experience with haunt marketing is that it's much, much, much easier to get people in rural areas to visit cities than to get people in cities to visit rural areas.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that being said, if you are doing a haunted trail, you are providing something that they cannot get in the city.
Yes.
So There's your marketing tip.
Yes.
This is something that you cannot get in your hometown. Come out here and get it.
Right.
And,
well,
and because that's one thing about, like, you know, I don't want to say, like, I love Rise. I think Rise is a great haunt.
Yeah.
But I always wonder about the marketing of it a little bit, because they're trying to market to two cities, New Orleans and Baton Rouge, both of which have really great haunts in city.
Yeah. Well,
and I think they're pulling more from the Hammond area, honestly, as far as foot traffic. But
right. And I mean, we hit them on the way to 13th Gate, and I'm sure that other people do, too.
Yeah. It's a little bit out of the way. You got to turn to north up 55 and
yeah, you gotta
do some wackadoodle stuff.
And do it just right. But you can, it is possible to hit both.
Your goal, basically, is to hit one of them. I think ideally Rise.
Yeah.
Almost right as they open.
Yes.
Like within 30 minutes of them opening. That way you can go, you can do Rise, you can even do the zombie paintball if you want.
Yeah.
Turn around, leave. That will get you to the 13th gate comfortably before they close.
Yes.
It's tough. We have done it multiple years.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do have to time that very meticulously if you're going to do it. But yeah.
Right. The other thing real quick about getting city people out into the country is that whenever you leave the city,
yeah,
and you're a city person,
city folk.
Yes, you're city folk. It's automatically putting you out of your comfort zone.
I agree.
So you have, as a haunt in the rural country, you have an advantage there.
The challenge, of course, is convincing them to make that trip.
Right.
And that
make
is
it an event destination.
Yeah, and it's so weird. I've seen memes here in New Orleans lately about how people will drive to Memphis or Atlanta like it's nothing,
right,
but asking them to go to the West Bank or to La Place, it's like,
yeah,
like asking them to drive to Mars or something. It's weird.
Yeah.
Like, you realize those are 15 minutes from...
Yes, we're always surprised when people from the East Bank come and visit our haunt during Halloween,
yeah,
because there are so many people who think they're going to get lost, and we're
easy,
literally 10 minutes from downtown.
I think you could be in the French Quarter from our house in 10-15 minutes easy.
Yeah.
Easy. you know, your construction costs, another thing to think about is your construction costs are lower, but your material costs are higher. Since you have an outdoor haunt, everything needs to be pressure treated lumber. You're going to need outdoor power cables, as you noted.
Right.
Everything has to everything's got to be able to survive the elements in your haunt. That's not something you run into. And this was actually something that came up at a haunt con, a haunt in West Texas. Was talking about how he had to replace all of his wood because he didn't buy pressure treated stuff for an outdoor haunt. And everyone in the room just looked at him.
Yeah.
Like, really?
It's like, you didn't think that one through, did you?
No, didn't.
Yep.
Rain. Yeah. It's a thing.
Yeah. Weather happens.
He's actually a really nice guy. I feel bad picking on him. But,
yeah.
And he's actually a pretty good haunt. He actually runs a pretty good haunt from what I understand. But anyways. And you're also, like I said though earlier, you're more limited on the scares you can build.
Right.
Your actors have more they can work with in nature. They have their bushes. They have their trees. They have stuff they can use.
Right.
But as far as what you can construct without just building a building,
yeah,
you've got limitations you've got to worry about.
Yeah.
So be thinking about that. Now, a quick word here on hybrid haunts. We're touching on those. Basically, they combine the challenges of both. You get all the lovely fire code issues and rain closures.
Yay!
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then this is, like I said, we've actually been to the 13th Gate a few times when Necropolis had to close. Now, what they did there is they routed people around the handful of outdoor sequences.
Right.
Which they apparently have a way they can do that. But they did close the Necropolis due to rain. So that comes up. But yeah, I mean, you have to be thinking about those things. And yes, I know the Necropolis 13 is... 13th Gate, rather, is always dealing with fire code issues. How do I know that? Because they're a haunt.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that from the owners. I just know this.
Yes, they're a haunt, and they change from the owners. 25% they try to every year.
And they seem to keep that up pretty well.
Yeah.
And the other thing is you can indeed combine the benefits as well. You can have sections with really great outdoor ambiance.
Right.
And then you can build then your custom-made scares and your controlled sequences later.
Right.
And, you know, we've actually seen this at various haunts work pretty darn well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, we keep going back to 13th Gate, I know, but they're one of the ones that actually managed to pull it off really, really well.
Right.
The outdoor sequences, as small as they are.
Yeah.
Are pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I actually do like the outdoor swamp sequence at House of Shock, too. I think that's done really well.
Yeah, and it gives you a very different vibe, a very different feel than what's in the interior of the haunt.
Right.
But once again, it creates problems for them if it rains.
Yes.
So,
yes. Yes, because wood can be slippery.
Yes, it can. It turns out that wood does not like water that much. But yeah, I mean, and like even like some of the haunts that we criticize, like Terror Test and so forth, it's a neat idea to have a lengthy path outdoors that goes into the haunt.
Right.
Build up some extra anticipation. Have some outdoor ambiance. Feel even more separated.
Yes.
From, so, I mean, you already, in the case of Terror Test, you probably already drove from some urban place
from
civilization
to
get there. This makes you feel even more secluded. It could be very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, so yeah, you can combine these two to great effect, but just realize you are combining both the benefits and the drawbacks at the same time.
Right.
So yeah, if you're going to have a hybrid haunt, rain insurance is the first thing to be thinking about. So yeah, and one of the things I have noticed, by the way, and I've seen this, like we saw this at Chamber of Horrors, the one in La Place before they moved.
Uh-huh.
They combined indoor and outdoor, except there it was indoor first, then outdoor.
Right.
To reverse the order. They did that in part because, A, they ran out of space in the building.
Yeah.
And it was a very inexpensive way to really increase the walkthrough time and add new sections.
Right.
So, yeah, that's something that you can think about, too.
Yeah, because they had an indoor building part, and then outdoor was graveyard.
Yep, basically. It was a graveyard slash cornfield, actually. They did a cornfield sequence.
Yeah, they did a cornfield, and then later they did the slaughterhouse sequence outside.
Yeah, they didn't, which was one of those aforementioned shack-type things that wasn't really a full building.
No, you walked in front of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but the long and short of it is, you can combine the two, just realize the limitations that it puts on you. Now, one of the questions I wanted to ask before we moved deeper in was, given the fact that rain keeps people away from haunts, even under the best of circumstances.
Right.
Even if you're like the mortuary and you're totally indoor, you've got a covered waiting area.
Right.
You've got a covered haunt. There's like no, you're never fully exposed to the elements, usually. Is rain days really that, having to cancel for rain really that heavy of a hit?
I think it is, and I think that it is because of the cleanup effort afterwards.
Fair.
Because you got to find some way to get that trail ready for the next night.
Good point, yeah. And further, even if you're only getting a third of that income, you're still getting something.
Yeah.
A part of something's better than all or nothing, basically.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the question then becomes, which is right for you and your haunt? What'd you think? Have you just thought of something?
I did. I thought of...
Oh, this is scary. Y'all praise yourselves!
Of giving out umbrellas with lights underneath so that your actors who are hiding in the woods could see your customers coming and give them the umbrellas no matter if it's raining or not.
Do you think people would use umbrellas if it's not raining, though?
Why not? Say, look, this is really cool. It'll help light the way. And if it does start raining, you're already going to stay dry.
Well, I guess what you could do is in lieu of like flashlight night, you give them an umbrella that only turns on when it's open. Or something like that. That's an idea.
I don't know.
I don't know if it's a good idea, but it's an idea.
No, it's not one of my better ones.
Nah, it's fine.
Honestly. But it was fun.
It was fun. Yes, it was fun. So which is right for you? Well, the honest truth is there's no simple answer for it.
Right.
And like I said in the very beginning, like we both agree, most people don't even think about this issue.
No.
They've already decided if there's going to be an indoor or outdoor haunt. But is your haunt... some questions to think about, though. Where is your haunt located?
Yeah.
Is it rural or is it urban? Do you have 50 acres of land that you can screw around with? Or... do you have a lot in the middle of a city?
Yeah.
If so, the decision's pretty much made for you, if we're going to be honest at that point. Do think about your climate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying you can't open up an outdoor haunt in a cold climate or a rainy climate. You're just going to have to mitigate those issues.
Right.
You're going to have to find ways to keep your customers warmer. You're going to have to find ways to mitigate against your rainy days.
Yeah.
And, you've got to buttress against that if you're going to be outdoors.
Lighted golf carts. They have a roof on top. Oh, Christ. You can have a driver.
God.
And then you wouldn't have the problem of people being not able to see.
There you go. You realize a golf cart can hold like four people tops.
I know, so it keeps the crowd small, so you still feel isolated. So you're going to have one guy,
four people?
Why not? If you got enough drivers.
It does not sound like a good business model, I'm just saying.
No.
It sounds fun, but it does not sound... Next, you're going to suggest a monorail system to go...
like
monorail!
Like the little zoo train.
Exactly. Boop, boop!
You could ride the ghost train through the spooky woods. Hey, that's actually a good idea.
But yeah, you've also got to be thinking about your fire code difficulties. Know what the issues are in your area. Yes, fire codes are supposed to be a nationwide thing.
Right.
But we all know that enforcement is not.
Yeah.
If
that doesn't mean go against them. No. That just means make sure that you know your fire codes.
Yeah, let me rephrase that. The base and the core fire codes are the same. There are always going to be local laws and things and so forth that change that.
Right.
But sometimes the larger issue is how those codes are enforced.
Yes.
It really is. So it's not just what's written and what's in the city ordinance or the county ordinance or whatever, or the parish ordinance if you're in Louisiana. It's how it's enforced.
Right.
And also, what's the cost of land versus a building?
Yeah.
Is it cheaper to build one of those structures and build a facade? Or is it cheaper just to buy the lot next door?
Right.
You know?
Or is it cheaper to buy a lot and put a building on it in a rural place?
Exactly.
Because that's what they did in La Paz.
Yes. So think about those things. Also, how much funding do you have? Outdoor haunts, if you've already got the land especially,
yeah,
are generally cheaper. So you might be able to start with an outdoor haunt and then move into an indoor haunt.
Right.
Or if you've got a building, you might start with an indoor haunt and then expand outdoor.
Right.
Like Chamber of Horrors did. So you might, look at what you have and how much money you have and then make decisions based on that calculus there.
Right.
And also think about who your customers and actors are. Are they going to show up to an outdoor haunt?
Yeah.
If you're trying to cater to lots of, very little kids and so forth, an outdoor haunt can be a lot of fun for them, but you've got to make sure that they're going to, not be miserable for reasons other than being scared.
Yeah.
Adults have a little more buttressing against that type of stuff. We're a little more rigid.
Yeah.
But, so be thinking about that. And also, be thinking about the nature of what your customers want. If you're in an area that's very well to do, and you've got lots of people that have never spent more than 5 minutes outside of air conditioning. And those places exist, man.
They do.
You're probably not going to get them into a hayride.
Right.
So just think about those things. It'd be
Or you might, because they might want to go, across the tracks, so to speak.
That, maybe that should be reserved for a marketing challenge, then.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Let us know. Did you try it? Let us know.
Let us know. Absolutely. But the main question is this. The main statement, rather, is this. There are successful haunts of both types out there. There are top-tier haunts that are both outdoor haunt and indoor haunt. It can be done extremely well either way.
Right.
It's just a matter of dealing with the disadvantages you have from your haunt and accenting the advantages.
Yes.
And I think that's really what haunts have to do best in this area.
Yeah.
But it's always weird to me. It's like I said, people don't make a decision about having an indoor and outdoor haunt.
Right.
Like, we never actually, at any point, really thought about having an outdoor haunt.
No.
It never crossed our mind.
Because we're urban.
We're urban, and we have a garage, and we have all this other stuff. We never...
Yeah. Well, even now that we're looking to
expand
to GoPro, and we're looking at getting a building.
Yeah. It's not even a question of, maybe we should buy 40 acres and a mule.
Yeah. No. Yeah,
that was a terrible joke.
Yep.
But no, we're not looking at buying 40 acres and setting up a trail haunt.
Right.
We're looking at getting a building somewhere.
Yeah.
Because that's how we think. That's how we view haunting. That's our perspective. And
right.
Maybe we need to volunteer 1 year at an outdoor haunt and see.
If we can find one close by.
There's a problem.
I think there is one. Over towards Lafayette.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, there's your problem. Now, that being said, I think we did You and I both kind of are in the outdoor portion of Chamber of Horrors. Outdoor-ish.
I wasn't in the outdoor area.
You were in the bathroom. That was technically outdoor.
Oh, okay.
That was not
inside. I felt like I was inside.
It felt inside for me, too. I was in the closet, but it was technically outdoor both times.
Yes.
And that's one of the, I guess that's one of the final statements, is just because, you know, just because it feels indoor or outdoor doesn't necessarily mean it is. We were both in exposed rooms.
Yeah.
If it had rained, we'd have gotten wet.
Yeah, that's probably true.
That's kind of my standard.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, that's about all that I have on this topic, and we're running out of time fast.
Yeah.
So, on that note, listen, guys, thank you very much for your support. This podcast has been growing by leaps and bounds. I'm super excited about that. Thank you for your support. Give yourselves a hand. Yay! But long story short, continue to like us. Find us on Facebook at Haunt Weekly. Find us on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. Subscribe to us on Podbean. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and now, thanks to Google, finally getting their heads out of their butt and adding podcast support, Google Play. Yes, I'm irate that Google took this long to put podcasts in. Okay?
I know.
I am irate. Irate, I say. Rabble, rabble, rabble. She's just looking at him like an idiot. This really needs to be a video podcast sometime so you can see these looks I get. This whole podcast, if it was a video, would be entitled John Say Something Stupid, Crystal Give Dirty Look. But anyways, thank you very much for your support. Find us at all those wonderful places, and we will see you guys next week. I'm getting the stupid look again.
No, you aren't.
What did I do?